I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate on this sunny afternoon. Have you ever been to a party where the wine looks promising in its bottle, but then it's served in flimsy plastic cups and it just doesn't taste the way you imagined? Or have you had a favorite rough pottery mug for your morning coffee, and in it, even the not-so-great coffee still tastes delicious? Well, a recent study has confirmed that the taste of a drink is affected by the feel of the container it comes in. The study was conducted by Maureen Morin, Associate Professor of Marketing at Rutgers University, and Aradhana Krishna of the University of Michigan. Professor Morin joins me now to tell us more about what they've found out about how consumers are influenced by packaging. Welcome.
Thank you.
What did you hope to learn when you got going with this experiment?
Well, we wanted to see whether what we call a non-diagnostic cue, something that, for example, you were talking about the quality of the cup, let's say that that water is served in, whether that would influence how the water actually tasted, at least for some people.
And did you use water? Was that your choice, beverage of choice for this?
We did. We wanted to choose a product that, for most people, you know, it's hard to determine quality, kind of an ambiguous product. So we deliberately chose water. Most people can't tell the differences in water quality.
And did you have to think about what, I mean, now there's all this talk about bottled water versus tap water and what temperature should you drink it at? Did that matter in the experiment?
Our cover story for most of the subjects was that we were testing a new bottled water. And we collected this data pretty much before, the whole discussion of is bottled water good for you, bad for you? Is it good for the environment or bad for the environment? So it wasn't really an issue when we were collecting our data.
So that was the story, though, that you told the people who participated in the experiment, that this was a new bottled water and you wanted to see how it tasted?
That's right.
And what about the cups? What kind of cups did you use?
We went out to sort of like party stores and found firm, what we call firm and flimsy versions of the same cup. So they were, you know, clear plastic cups, such as you might use at a party or something like that.
And some are the kind that you pick them up and immediately spill something all over yourself because it's so flimsy that the liquid comes out. And
well,
some
I don't know if they're
sturdier.
That flimsy, but they were definitely detectable differences in the firmness of the cup.
And were people able to see the cups, or did you take away that?
That's a really good question. We did four studies in total. Some of the studies, the subjects were allowed to view the cup. And in other studies, we blindfolded half the people just in case it was the look of the cup, the appearance of the cup that was driving the results. And we found it wasn't the appearance of the cup. Even when the participants were blindfolded, we got the same results.
And so how much did these tasters know about the experiment going in? Was really their main experience that this was a test for new bottled water?
Yeah, we try not to alert the participant as to the real goal of the study so that they don't try to answer either, you know, to help us out or, you know, to hurt us.
Mm-hmm.
So we really try to just indicate that, you know, we're interested in their evaluations of a new product, which is not an unusual type of setup when you're working in a business school. So that's a pretty believable cover story.
How did the tasters react to the water? I mean, what did you find out?
Well, everyone tasted the water through a straw. So they held the cup, one or two cups, depending on what study they're in.
Oh, they didn't even put the cup to their lips.
No, we were really trying to control for everything. We thought maybe some cups feel better against the lip or that it actually changes the taste. So we really wanted to find out the effect of just holding the cup. So that's the only thing we varied in most of these studies. And so they'd hold the cup and then taste the water so many sips through a straw. And then, in some studies they evaluated how good the water tasted. In other studies they'd indicate how much money they'd be willing to pay for the water and things like that. So we had different measures of their reaction to the water.
And, you know, in the lead to this, I said that it did matter. How did it matter what the cups were made of? What did you find?
Well, you know, it was kind of surprising to us, which is why research is so much fun, is in addition to taking part in these studies, after they do the tasting, we have everyone fill out what's called a need for touch scale, which was developed by Joanne Peck and Terry Childers, another set of researchers. And this scale measures things like how much do you enjoy touching products. You know, touching products can be fun, that sort of thing. And then we
And did they say, wait, I thought we were talking about tasting water. Why are you asking me all these questions about touching things? Or did they just, you know, they're part of the study?
Well, that's also another really good question. That's why we have them fill out that scale after they've done all the tasting so that it can't influence what their reactions are to the water.
Interesting.
And we split everyone into those who score high on this scale, which means they generally like to touch things, products, and those for whom touch is just not that important. And what we expected going in, based on prior research, was that the people who are, we call high on NFT, high on need for touch, we expected that their responses would be more influenced by the cup quality. But in fact, what we found is that it's the people who are low in need for touch who were influenced by cup quality.
That is surprising. What kind of ideas did you draw from that?
Yeah, so what we figure is happening, and again, right now it's really mostly speculation, but what we think is happening is people who really enjoy touching products, you know, people who go around shopping and they touch sweaters and they're touching everything and they gain enjoyment from it. Even if they're not in the market to buy something, they just like touching products out in the marketplace. For these folks, they're very conscious, they're very much aware of the influence of touch on their opinions and so forth. And so we actually think that they have sort of a better ability to correct for the influence of touch when touch shouldn't matter. So not that they're consciously going through some sort of, you know, mental strategy, but something like they're holding the cup and tasting the water, and if they like, you know, the firmer cup better, somehow they're able in their brain to say, okay, I like this cup better, but I know that this doesn't influence. I'm very into touch, and I'm aware of it, and I know that this should not influence the taste of the water. Whereas people who are not very conscious of touching products and therefore, you know, the potential impact that touch can have, they don't mentally correct for the influence of the cup's feel.
Now, what did you find? Which were the cups that made people like the taste of the water better?
Well, it's pretty boring. We basically had a firm cup and a flimsy cup. And we just used those throughout all the studies. So.
And did people prefer firm or flimsy? I mean, did it, or?
Well, we did a study actually to test just that because during the review process, one of the reviewers of the paper suggested, well, maybe it's that people who are high in need for touch just like touching everything, and you know they can't even tell the difference between firm and flimsy. They just love it when they can touch a product. So we actually did a study, and we found that it's true that people who are high in need for touch, when they're able to touch something, they rate it higher overall than people who are low in need for touch. But even those high in need for touch like the firmer cup better. So it's not that they can't tell a difference or anything like that. It's just that it seems that they can correct for the influence.
And did those who have a lower need for touch, did they like the firmer cup better also?
Yes, they did. So they picked up the difference, and they're aware there's a difference between the cups, but it seems like they can't mentally correct for the influence.
Okay, here's a question I have a feeling many of our listeners are wondering, which is, you know, many of us are not involved in this kind of market research, and it just, to spend all of this time and effort on how a touch affects, I mean, what were you hoping to be able to understand, and how might someone apply this? Because it seems like a lot of work for something.
Yes, it's logistically significant amount of work. Well, let's say you're,
I like that description, yes.
Let's say you're someone like Starbucks, and, you know, Starbucks is trying to revamp sort of, you know, the experience in their stores now, to sort of, and they're doing things like introducing a new blend of coffee, and they're eliminating hot breakfast sandwiches because they're worried that the smell of those sandwiches is interfering with the coffee aroma in the stores. So they're working on the atmospherics and other things within the store. One thing, you know, when firms run into a little bit of trouble, one of the first things they think about is cost-cutting measures. And so maybe one thing that Starbucks might be considering or might have on the table is, you know, should we try to get the cost of our cups down, either the cups themselves or those, you know, doohickeys that go around
right,
the cup
right,
that you hold it with, or maybe those thick plastic things that go on top, you know, and that's a reasonable question to ask. And our research would suggest that, well, maybe you don't want to cut there because for some people, those aspects of the, you know, the packaging of the product could actually make the product taste better for some people. And so maybe that's not where you want to cut. Now, I don't think Starbucks is considering that, but that could be something that a question that somebody might ask. And so in that respect, you know, it could have some implications in the marketplace.
Now, did you go into this study because someone did ask, or was this just something that one of you said, I wonder if?
No, it was one of those, I wonder if. Actually, I have to attribute that to my co-author, Aradhana Krishna. She was really sort of the driver of this study and started asking the questions in the beginning.
And when you presented this to the people who might have to say, yes, you can do this study, was there any skepticism, or was it a kind of, oh, yeah, that is interesting?
No, we have not come across too much skepticism. No, I don't know. Maybe it's the business school environment. People see the maybe the dollars and cents implications of some of the stuff we're doing.
Well, in the way you described it with Starbucks, I can understand that if you need to cut costs, you need to understand where that will do the least harm.
You know, the flip side of that is, you know, there could be a public policy issue in the sense that, you know, the feel of the cup really shouldn't influence how something tastes. And so if you find that this affects, you know, a significant proportion of the population, maybe consumers need to be made aware of the fact that they tend to do this, you know, in terms of, you know, enhancing their ability to make the right decisions in the marketplace.
Because their decisions may be influenced by something that truly may not be consequential except from the way they perceive it.
That's right.
Well, Maureen Moran, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Rutgers University marketing professor Maureen Moran.